at the start of the documentary More Than a Month. The film shows archive footage from 60 Minutes, where Mike Wallace asked actor Morgan Freeman his feelings on Black History Month.
Black History Month, you find?
Ridiculous.
Why?
You're going to relegate my history to a month? Which month is White History Month?
I'm Jewish.
Which month is Jewish History Month?
There isn't one.
Do you want one?
No.
I don't either. I don't want a Black History Month. Black history is American history.
What's the place of Black History Month in 2012? I'm Jabalani LaFall, and we'll speak with the director who took his feelings on the month, put them on a big white signboard, and hit the streets of America. That's on Central Standard, coming up after this hour's news. Good morning, Kansas City. Here are some names you may be familiar with. Martin Luther King Jr., Rosa Parks, Harriet Tubman, and Frederick Douglass. It's Black History Month, and to celebrate, we will remember the lives and legacy of Martin Luther King Jr., Rosa Parks, Harriet Tubman, and Frederick Douglass. Our guest today thinks these people are very pivotal in our history, but that we hear about them far too much, in that order, every single year. And he doesn't think that's quite enough. This is Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Joining us now is the documentary filmmaker Shukri Hassan Tillman, who joins us from the studios of NPR West to tell us why he walked the streets with a sandwich board that says, End Black History Month. There will be a special screening of More Than a Month, his film, on Saturday, February 11th at 11 a.m. at the Tivoli Theater in Westport. The film will also be aired on KCPT February 16th at 10 p.m. Also joining us live in the studio is UMKC history professor Pella McDaniel, a former defensive lineman for the Kansas City Chiefs, and now he studies the life and history of not just Black Americans, but all Americans. Welcome to the show, Mr. Tillman and Dr. McDaniel.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for having me.
Before we get into the thick of the show, we should launch our own repetitious Black History question. Should we end Black History Month? Kansas City, if Black History Month were to end, what would you replace it with? Should it be replaced with a more wider spread, inclusive curriculum? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or shoot us an email at centralstandard@kcur.org. Mr. Tillman, what made you set out to make this film? More Than a Month, One Man's Struggle to End Black History Month.
I'll tell you there were two distinct things. One was my own sort of growing up with Black History Month. I mean, historians sort of, it's unclear exactly when it became a month, but most people tend to agree that somewhere around 1976 goes from a week to a month. It was a week started by Carter G. Woodson in 1926. I'm born in 1979, so literally, as I'm coming of age, so too is Black History Month. So I remember, you know, as I say in the film, I loved Black History Month. I mean, it was a sense of empowerment, a sense of pride that I got from seeing all these people. And I say in the film, and I used to believe that these people were like superheroes. You know, the people from the civil rights movement were like, you know, I thought they would all had capes and superpowers. I loved it. And I remember going from, you know, I had the McDonald's placemat with the heroes in Black history and all these things. And I remember as I became an adult, I started to go from feeling like this was great to a sense of condescension almost.
And that's to a certain degree, and not to interrupt you, but that's sure. To a certain degree why you made it personal, why you made the approach of the film personal.
Absolutely, absolutely. And because, you know, I wanted to position myself as, I'm not a historian or an academic or an educational policy maker, but I wanted to position myself like the everyman who's thinking about these issues. And I knew I wasn't alone, which was really the second impetus to make the film. Once I heard Morgan Freeman on 60 Minutes in 2005, that was the first time I had heard someone say it publicly. So I thought, oh, this would be an interesting way to begin a journey.
And the ironic thing about that is what Morgan Freeman says he'd like to end Black History Month, but you're likely to see Morgan Freeman every February in the movie Glory. So there's a big irony in that.
Sure.
Dr. McDaniel, you appear in the film. And when you found out Mr. Tillman was doing with this film, what were your initial thoughts?
Well, first of all, I want to say hello to Shakri.
Hey, Mr. McDaniel. Dr. McDaniel, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Good, I had a chance good. To screen the film last week, and you know, it was when approached, it was provocative because, again, this idea of ending Black History Month, it kind of jived with exactly some of my thoughts because, again, it wasn't represented well, not the film, but how Black history has had an impact on American society and really global society. And so my participation in the film was more or less to examine the intent and purpose of Woodson in the creation of Negro History Week. And so in my research and you know, at Emory University, you know, we were really exploring what was its intent? What was the mission and goal behind the creation of this phenomenal kind of social movement?
And you were in the film as a scholar on Carter G. Woodson, Carter G. Woodson's
yes.
work when
yes.
Shukri came to Atlanta to talk to you about it.
Yes.
Now, in modern times, Black History Month is almost sort of contracted from its original
exactly.
purpose of Negro history. Talk a little bit about that before we get back into
okay,
the
film. So Woodson's intent, of course, was to help educate Black folk and white folk about the contributions of African Americans to this history. And so the Negro History Week was designated as the second week of February to honor the birthdays of Abraham Lincoln and Frederick Douglass. He's called the Great Emancipator and the Great Agitator. But that was not the extent of it.
Right.
What he anticipated and what he worked for was to have Black folk especially do the research and work, practice their oratory skills, put on plays, and have a culmination in that 1 week. So you had 51 weeks worth of work that would culminate in that one long week of, you know, of plays, of contests to see who could memorize one of these Frederick Douglass speeches, of kids putting on plays where Joe Louis was the protagonist and maybe Max Schmeling was the antagonist. But it was to force the community in a way to recognize its history and participate in the development of these different educational tools.
And then you have this long gap between the 1920s when Carter G. Woodson started Negro History Week, what was then Negro History Week, to the 1970s, the mid-1970s, when Mr. Tillman, our filmmaker, was born, that now there's a Black History Month. And then there's a fervor that he grows up with. And now, Mr. Tillman, in your film, your premise is a provocative premise that you want to end it. And many would say this process is akin to a Black man calling for the end of affirmative action. Now that you've made the film, how would you propose to replace the month, Mr. Tillman?
Well, I think that we're – I would say first that I think ending Black History Month is where the film begins, but it's not necessarily where the film ends. I thought it was a worthy place to start, and I still think that question should be asked. I think at the end of the day – excuse me. We all agree that we want the continued exposure and increased exposure of African-American history in education and society. I think that if the casualty of that endeavor is the end of Black History Month, then that's okay. It's a worthy endeavor to increase and continue the mission of Dr. Woodson. I don't think the mission is to continue to have Black History Month. I don't think that's core to what Dr. Woodson was trying to do. So I don't think, while I understand the understand the value of Black History Month as it exists, and continue to understand that, I think there is a higher calling.
And there is a higher calling. You walk through the streets of New York with a sandwich board calling for the end of Black History Month and circulating a petition to that effect, and you had a sort of a mixed response. What were some of the interesting off-camera responses?
They involved my physical health.
Wow.
No, you know, I was, you know, honestly, most people's reaction was, look, I don't know if you've ever walked down the street with a sandwich board sign on in any capacity, but it is an awkward experience. Most people just are going to think that you're crazy. It doesn't matter what you're saying. So most of the responses were, you know, who is this lunatic on the street corner with a sandwich board sign? But once I engaged people, I was really surprised by how many people were willing to sign that petition. And I was also surprised by the diversity of people who were willing to sign that. And I think people really had a sense that once they sort of talked to me, though they might not agree, they really had a sense of, yeah, there is something. I don't really, you know, I had parents that would come up to us and say, yeah, my kid doesn't really get much African-American history in school outside of February. Don't really hear much. You know, that was a constant sort of refrain. And then aside from just education, this is the perception of this history as somehow belonging to February. For a lot of people, created a sort of perception barrier that it was somehow different from American history. And that was also something we were concerned with. So we got those responses.
What misconceptions, Mr. Tillman, about Black History Month were you able to clear up in the process of making this film? And as you mull that answer over, we're going to have Dr. McDaniel talk about maybe a hypothetical scenario, what a month would be replaced with if it were replaced. What misconceptions, Mr. Tillman, were you able to clear up for yourself and in the larger guise of Black History Month?
Well, I think the biggest one is that most people don't know where it came from. And most people have this perception that it was given to us in some way, that you know, like Congress got together and passed the legislation that there would be a Black History Month, and they gave us the shortest month because, you know, you hear that often. So I think we were able to get into the roots of where Black History Month comes from and the noble endeavor that it's set out to be. That was probably the biggest thing. And I'll let Mr. McDaniels answer this question also, but I think in terms of alternatives to Black History Month and what to do, I think it really runs the gamut. I think Philadelphia, it runs the gamut from small to large and individual to collective. Philadelphia is an example of, I think, something large. They're the only school district in the country with a mandatory African-American history requirement. I don't think that's a perfect solution, still a separate course, but it is something, and it's a step in the right direction. That's an example of a citywide solution, if you will, for lack of a better term, to Black History Month. There's also, I read about a guy, and I'll be really brief, who ran an African-American History Expo, also in Philadelphia, coincidentally. Huge event at the convention center every year for 15 years. It was in February. He took the individual step that last year he wanted to put it over, similar to what my mother does in the film, wanted to put it over Easter weekend. And he did that. Why? Just at great risk, by the way. But just because he wanted to see this history perceived as something that was outside of February. So I think the alternatives run the gamut, but it's up to us as Americans to make those alternatives.
It's an individual effort, isn't it?
It is an individual effort. I was sharing with Jabulani before the show that, you know, and I think you allude to this also in the film, Shakri, is that, you know, the month of February is a great month for any Black scholar to make lots of money to get that new car or buy that beach house, because there's a request to have them come to different community organizations or even businesses to talk about the contributions of African Americans. The individual kind of efforts to break from that tradition or break from that kind of, you know, lucrative endeavor is very important. I kind of, you know, shut my phone off in February because I'm available year round. And the idea that, you know, that the history of these people, of African-Americans and Africans, people of Negro descent, as Woodson would say, to be reduced to a month, you know, in some ways, like Morgan Freeman would say, I don't want a month. And so, but also, I think you're correct in understanding recognizing the fact that a majority of people out there who see Black History Month as something that was provided by government, you know, the shortest, coldest month of the year and maybe 29 days with a leap year, I think that's one of the misconceptions that we have to educate people around and through. But also, I think we need to get back to the intent that Carter Woodson had for this particular Negro History Week, which became the month. If I may elaborate on that, he had four particular goals. The first was to collect sociological and historical data on the Negro or black folk. The second was to study peoples of African blood, which meant going to Africa and
the whole diaspora.
The Pan-Africanism was something that was very important to Woodson and to Du Bois and previously Martin Delaney and Alexander Crummell. The third that he had as part of the goals for the Association for the Study of Negro History and Life was to publish books in the field of Negro history, meaning that do this research and this work and publish works so people can consume this history. And the final was to promote the harmony between the races by acquainting the one with the other. And so it wasn't to be exclusive. It was to be inclusive, therefore, to account for your contributions to the development of America and the globe and this whole idea of what it means to be civilized. So it wasn't to isolate black folk in America. Excuse me. It was to transcend the boundaries that the social construction of race had created and seeing and having other people see you as being contributing members of society.
What this film shows is that the jury is still out on that original intent. You're listening to Central Standard, 89.3 KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. Our guest, one of our guests, shared Morgan Freeman's sentiments and has called for the end of Black History Month in his documentary recently aired on Independent Lens on PBS. It's called More Than a Month, One Man's Struggle to End Black History Month. Shukri Hassan Tillman is that man. He joins us from the studios of NPR West to tell us what he learned about the history of the month. And also with us is UMKC History Professor Pella McDaniel, who appears in the film and is giving us a primer on the month's origins and where we should go from here. Kansas City, how do you feel about Black History Month? Is it inadequate in highlighting what really are American contributions, or is it necessary to continue to celebrate a rich cultural heritage? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or shoot us an email at centralstandard@kcur.org. Mr. Tillman, you took a particular issue with the celebration of Black History Month commercially, which is one of the more interesting and new aspects of the film. Tell us what you discovered, beginning with the grocery store specials on collard greens and Black History Month Nikes, which you wore as an ironic symbol in the film. Tell us about the commercialization of Black History Month.
That's right. You know, people always ask me if those grocery store ads are real, and yes, they are.
Yeah, they are.
There was, you know, I think my biggest sort of takeaway from that is that it is. I don't think that there's an answer in terms of if it's good or bad. It's a complicated thing in aspects of commercialism. One, we happen to live in a society that just is commercialized. We blend commercial endeavors with noble endeavors all the time. And it's a weird situation. You know, even in those grocery store ads, they really literally are having a sale on cornbread and hot sauce and chicken and collard greens for real. But running down the side of one of those ads, at least, one of them tried to make it better, but one of them had a list of sort of African-Americans who contributed to the grocery industry. So the guy who, I believe the guy who invented the refrigerated truck was one of the people on there. So it's a weird kind of thing. Nike, for example, donated part of their proceeds from that shoe, from that Black History Month shoe, to Cheney University that year. I think many of the institutions that produce Black history-related exhibits, programs, are underwritten by corporate and commercial endeavors. It's hard to escape. So while I still feel uncomfortable with it, and I say in the film, it's hard to know sort of where to stand on that, even if it's uncomfortable, which it is for me. We live in a society where you for better or worse, need that corporate involvement in order for certain cultural things to go, which is a strange situation.
And, of course, the irony of wearing Black History Month Nikes in February is that if you live in a cold weather climate, you're going to mess up some pretty fresh shoes.
That's a poor investment.
It is. One of our listeners, Alexander, suggests reenacting an American Diversity Month to provide an emphasis on historical impacts of dozens, if not hundreds, of different cultures that have played a part in the past and continuing role in American culture. Thank you, Alexander, for those thoughts. We got Bob in South KC. Welcome to the conversation, Bob.
Well, thank you, Javelani, and it's a pleasure to be on. As an old graduate of Dr. Jeremiah Cameron and Dr. Beasley's, I share your feelings that in the best of all possible worlds, there wouldn't be no need for a month dedicated to Black history, because it should be in American history as an important part of what American history is. Unfortunately, history as was Western civilization history. And part of the reason I called is I used to work on the railroad, I'm retired, and we used to ran out to Kansas, and a little farm community in Kansas, and on Martin Luther King's birthday, their high school and grade school would go to school, and I asked them why they did that, and they said, well, there's no Black people in this town. And I said that this is, much like Deb said, unless all are freed, then none are free. And some of my friends up there agreed with me, but their idea was to save the day for a snow day, which I thought was of course, missing the whole point of what it is. And unfortunately, I'm afraid that I too am, of course, bemused by the dumbing down of commercialism, but commercialism seems to dumb down everything in our culture.
Thank you, Bob, for your thoughts. Speaking of those thoughts, commercialism dumbing down, is this Dr. McDaniel really kind of just a symbol now? And does it need to sort of evolve from the symbol?
I think it does. I Woods died in 1950, and so he had no contribution in extending this to a month.
At all,
you know. And I think those who kind of took the vision of the visionary, tried to fit into the times, as Shakria mentioned earlier, 76, a number of things, the social movements were happening, you know, from the 1960s into this early part of the mid part of the 1970s. And so the intent is there to expand it, to recognize the contributions. But I think that had it had consequences. And, you know, some of the unintended consequences, people didn't work as hard as they did previously when it was Negro History Week, whereas they were, you know, putting on these plays. Now they're commercial. Now they're canned. So like the 11 months out of the year, people aren't necessarily working anticipating Black History Month. They know it's coming. They keep the placards in the back room. They put them up on the shelves in the grocery stores. Or, you know, there was a school that that I went to their Black History Month celebration maybe 20 years ago here in Kansas City, and was working as a mentor. And the students were one day practicing for their Black History Month skit. And what they were doing was similar in the film to what Shakri's mother discovered what they were doing. There was no kind of understanding of the contributions. It was more or less a get up and dance party. And so I asked the question, well, who's coordinating this? And it was a parent who was concerned. So that noble endeavor, approach, I appreciate it, but the content was not there to inspire anyone to know more about their history or to explain this history to people who would not know its contribution to American history. So the over-commercialization of it has not necessarily dumbed it down. It's packaged it so you really don't have to think about it.
Right, right. And that way it inspires no work at all.
None whatsoever.
Mr. Tillman, you did something pretty bold in the filming, going up against the Black History Month establishment. Tell us about your early playful, antagonistic relationship with the Association for the Study of African American Life and History. They hold a banquet every year in D.C., and you crashed that banquet. Tell us about that.
That's right. I crashed that banquet, no ticket, cameras rolling, and I eventually got into contact with their vice president, Daryl Scott, who plays a large role in the film and sort of plays the role of being a protector of Black History Month and really speaking voice, I think, to what a lot of people who watch the film feel. You know, now I'm a member, just to give you a sense of
right, journey.
Right, but that was the Kool-Aid.
Right, and that was very Michael Moore-ish of you to go in there and crash it like that. And but interestingly enough, what led to you now being a member is that you sat down with the acronym is OSLA, Daryl Michael Scott, that you just mentioned, and he told you in a very poignant moment in the film, be careful what you're asking for. Did that statement make you change course?
Absolutely.
In Black History Month, he said, be careful what you're asking for.
Absolutely. And I think that this is the journey of the film. It asks questions, and it starts with this ending of Black History Month question and idea. But along the way, we try to look deeper. And I think this was one of the – I know this was one of the moments where – in my journey, I had to look at this issue a little bit deeper. There is a danger to ending Black History Month. I don't want to be responsible for, if it's true that if Black History Month went away, there would be no stories of African Americans, that whole element would just disappear. I don't want that. That's not my goal. So it certainly made me think about those things. By the end, go ahead.
Oh, no, here's something that from the film that sort of leads to the dilution of history and African-American history discourse in this country vis-a-vis Black History Month. There came a point in the film where you did a survey on history at a central location. And tell us about that survey and why its results sort of caused you to hit a brick wall in your ongoing thesis about Black History Month. The playing cards.
Yes. Well, I try a bunch of things in the film to try to – I get to a place where I figure out that I have to try to prove that something is wrong. And having an opinion is one thing, but I've got to – if I'm really going to sell this idea, then I've got to be able to have some tangible proof that something's wrong with Black History Month. So I see a social psychologist who helps me to develop an experiment to try to measure – the self-esteem response, the response of value towards history. And we had sort of a control group and an experimental group. And I should say that there's a reason why I don't have a PhD in psychology. I don't know how great I was at conducting this experiment. But at the end of the day, after we surveyed about 300 people, the results came back that there was really no response, basically, that Black History Month seemed to have no effect on how people, black, white, or other, perceived the history. So,
and that makes it even worse. That makes it even worse. Yeah. I mean, you were very dejected in that part of the film because, I mean, it's one thing to want Black History Month. It's one thing to not want Black History Month. But it's even worse to have a sort of, Black History Month.
Yeah, it's neither here nor there.
Right.
That's bad. So,
what do you think of that?
I thought it was interesting because I think context always matters. And so when you have a society that has Black History Month and it's also saturated with black faces, that the value of the history and it's in and of itself is in some ways not watered down, but it's elusive. You can't necessarily measure that. Had you done this study back in 1950 or 1940, I'm pretty sure it would have been a different result. But again, yes. It's context, right? But I thought also, I mean, you know, Shakri did, I think, an excellent job of trying to find facts to support his thesis. And in the end, you know, and we'll get to this apparently, in the end, where do we go from here? Where do we go from here? Because, again, as you said, if we dissolve it and get rid of it, that's a political power that you kind of give up. But you force those individuals, those historians of African-American history and life to do more work. You have to put on exhibits year-round. You have to do a lot of work to make sure that the populace is educated about the contributions.
And we're going to talk about what will force that work in a few moments here. There will be a special screening of Shakri Hasan Tilghman's documentary movie More Than a Month, One Man's Struggle to End Black History Month, this Saturday, February 11th, 11 a.m. at the Tivoli Theater in Westport. The film will also be airing on KCPT February 16th at 10 p.m. We're with Shakri Hasan Tilghman and UMKC history professor Pella McDaniel, who appears in the film and is giving us a primer on Black History Month's origins and where we should go from here. We're going to take a quick break. When we return, Dr. McDaniels will tell us more about the origins of black history and the importance of local history in the overall discussion. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Carter G. Woodson, commonly known as the father of black history, once said, "The mere imparting of information is not education." And that phrase means a lot as we look at the ongoing relevance of Black History Month, which was once Negro History Week. We've been discussing a documentary recently aired on Independent Lens on PBS and coming to KCPT on February 16th, as well as the Tivoli Theater on February 11th at 11 a.m. in Westport. It's called More Than a Month, One Man's Struggle to End Black History Month. That documentary's director, Shakri Hassan Tillman, and also joining us live in the studio is UMKC history professor Pella McDaniel, former defensive lineman for the Kansas City Chiefs, and now a history professor who appears in the film and is giving us a primer on the month's origins and where it should go from here. Mr. Tillman, before you part with us on today's program, what does that phrase mean to you, Carter G. Woodson's phrase, "The mere imparting of information is not education"? Isn't that the entire point of your film, More Than a Month?
Yeah. I mean, I think that mere information or mere bullet points or heroes or trivia or these things, while they're not bad, do not equal understanding. And I think history, really, history is vitally important to a society, but I think it's important for two reasons. One, as I say at the end of the film, it tells the story of who we were, and that's one thing, and that's fine. It tells that story, and that's a living story, and it changes, and we have the right to change it, and should. It's not an equation or a math problem or a formula. It lives. But really, history is important because how we tell the story of history reflects who we are. And we should always be endeavoring, as the Constitution says, to create a more perfect union. And history functions in this way. This is why I think this question of Black History Month and the role of the African American experience is vitally important to who we are.
And tell us more about, as you take that spirit forward, tell us more about your More Than a Month mobile app. And how did that come about? And how does it advance your cause of ending Black History Month, not outright, but as it is, by expanding Black history into the greater American consciousness?
Sure. We talked earlier about what people can do next, and I agree, just to reiterate, that it's both individual and collective, small and large. And what we decided to do as filmmakers, as our next step, is we created a mobile app, which, just like a Starbucks app or a bank app would show you the nearest Starbucks or nearest ATM, this app, which is called More Than a Map with two P's, think about it, will
right.
show you will show you if you click on it, will show you locations in your vicinity that are relevant to African American history. Now, here's the greatest feature. Because we don't have a team of 1,000 people, you can also, as a user, upload points in your community, because we can't cover the whole map. So once you do that, and once it's approved by we have a partnership with a historical organization, once it's approved for its accuracy, it becomes part of the map. So this is a collaborative map-building program that will exist in the palm of your hand.
Well, that's a way to definitely make Black history and take it forward. Thank you for joining us, Mr. Tillman. Mr. Shakri Hassan Tillman is the director of More Than a Month, One Man's Struggle to End Black History Month, and we see that he's taking it forward. His film will be at the Tivoli Theater February 11th and also be aired on KCPT February 16th at 10 p.m. He joins us from NPR West. Thank you for joining us, Mr. Tillman.
Thank you so much for having me. And Dr. McDaniels, I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, we'll talk soon.
Dr. McDaniels, I'm talking to you now.
Okay.
So tell us about your book on the father of Black history, Carter G. Woodson, what you learned and what people should know.
Right. First of all, it's a catalog that I put together when I was a graduate student at Emory University. And I was one of two graduate students responsible for cleaning 2,000 books, annotating these book selections from this library, and then crafting narratives to explain different portions of his life and his contributions. That project took about 2 years for us to work through. And in that process, I learned more about the man and his intent and purpose behind Negro History Week, again, which we recognize now as Black History Month. Probably one of the most important features to his life that I found important, especially for my own research, was how he was involved in community education. He understood the black church was important, that fraternal organizations, that any active, you know, on the ground community force would help him disseminate this information. And so you'll find in this history, in this particular volume, that we discuss how Woodson took this idea, this vision of educating the black masses and then also educating the larger American community, how churches became significant. And we mentioned earlier that Negro History Week was a culmination of 51 weeks worth of work. Well, these churches became the center of the community as it was during slavery, as it was during Reconstruction. And he understood that. So here's a historian who understood his community and understood the power that the church represented. Now, this is important also because when you move beyond the church and you talk about HBCUs, which are historically black colleges and universities, when they were in their prime, when they were growing still, he understood that we have to infuse these universities with articles and books so that these students who are coming to these universities to be educated can know more about themselves within the context of their development as new Americans. This is outside of Reconstruction. This is the early part of the 20th century. So he understood that if we're going to move forward as a people, as a nation, that this information had to be imparted, and it had to be work that was done by qualified scholars, not putting together mythologies. It had to be put together by people forcing the issue.
Based on your knowledge of Carter G. Woodson's work, do you think he might be dissatisfied with the modern pace and application of Black History Month, in air quotes, Black History Month?
Yeah, you know, I don't want to kind of try to embody Woodson. But what I would say is that I think he would, in my opinion, be somewhat disappointed in that the history has not been absorbed more readily by the larger society. I would say that even as we talk about local history and how it's been commercialized to the point where you don't have a complete understanding of the people who made the contributions, but you can appreciate, you know, the entertainment quality of certain portions of the history, that would be disappointing because you've taken away the humanity of the people who have made these contributions.
Taking Woodson's ideas deeper, what separates information from education, Dr. McDaniel?
Application. How do you apply what you know? How do you use it to move forward? How do you take advantage of knowledge imparted by those who have wisdom, whether it be written or verbal? In society today, you know, thinking is for doing, and people think more about the kind of ice cream they want to have or what they want to add with their latte, as opposed to understanding the context within which things occur. Sometimes the unintended consequences lead us down pathways or roads that can be beneficial, but if we're not thinking, if we're not present in those moments, we lose those opportunities.
We're discussing the ongoing relevance or lack thereof of Black History Month here on Central Standard Live with Dr. Pella McDaniel, a UMKC history professor. 816-235-2888, 816-235-2888. Tell us about your feelings on Black history. We have Imani in KC. Imani, welcome to Central Standard.
Thank you so much for taking my call. While I don't want to see the eradication of Black History Month, my big concern is the impact that it has on children. I think any more Black History Month has come to become like a funeral. It's a memorial to who we used to be. And I think a lot of children are not interested in Black history because they don't see how they can create those same type of accomplishments because of the high cost of tuition and the level of unemployment that we have. You know, they don't see how they can be Dr. Charles Drew. They don't see how they can be a Carter G. Woodson. They don't think of themselves as being historians because to them, you know, it's even more out of reach than it was for somebody during those times. And I think a lot of children experience a great amount of shame because, and I really hate to say this, but for a lot of children, it's a reminder of slavery, you know, and that's all it is for them. And that's all it is for a lot of white people is, you know, oh, we're remembering that you used to be slaves.
Right. That is a very interesting point that hardly ever comes up. Imani calls it a funeral. right. for who African Americans right. used to be. And these figures, Martin Luther King, Frederick Douglass, Rosa Parks, Harriet Tubman, right. Et cetera, are very imposing, large figures, stoic, powerful, black and white images that do evoke some sense of finality.
They also invoke the past. They invoke right. the past in a way that speaks to perseverance, resilience, you know, this notion that you can come from the bleakest of situations and rise above those.
But for that reason, is it generationally inaccessible, as Imani says?
I think it's how, based on how it's taught. I teach history, and not just black history. I teach American history. And as I teach history, you have to allow for these different narratives to shine through and rise to the top when they're important. And when we talk about, you know, African-American contributions, you want to talk about biographies. You want to talk about people and their histories. But I think one of the failings that we have a tendency to overlook is that when we teach our students, we don't get down and dirty with them. We don't get to the point where it's an intimate conversation. We make these sometimes grotesque generalizations about histories or the people who participate in these histories, so they don't have a chance to connect.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. Our guest is UMKC history professor Pelham McDaniels, who appears in the film More Than a Month, One Man's Struggle to End Black History Month. Dr. McDaniels has been giving us a primer on the origins of Black History Month, and we've been discussing where it should be go from here. Also joining us are two UMKC students involved in a recent project, speaking of where history goes from here, called Barbecue, Baseball, and Jazz, an example of year-round Black history, Kansas City style, welcoming Les Stitt and Elizabeth Bartles to the studio. Hello.
Glad to be here.
Thanks for having us.
Now, Dr. McDaniel, we recently had Dr. Doretha Williams, the new executive director of the Black Archives of Mid-America, on the show, and she said often lost in Black History Month is the vital importance of local history.
Right. What we call is the local narrative. We, you know, we have an idea of the contributions of African Americans in Kansas City based on this idea of 18th and Vine. That's it. That's the idea most people have. Barbecue, baseball, and jazz. And that was what we call a bait and switch for the class, because everyone knows in Kansas City that there is barbecue, baseball, and jazz. And the idea that there was a underlying connective narrative was something that we have been struggling with, and this is what we tried to accomplish.
Well, Les, tell us about the recent project on local history that you did to delve further beyond the baseball, barbecue, and jazz. And we should mention that these are white American students and history students here who are enjoying that history. So tell us about the local project, Les.
A minute ago, Dr. McDaniels talked about the difference between information and education, and that being application. And that's really what this course was. It was kind of applied history. You know, in a standard course, you know, you have lectures and book reviews and exam and research papers. But we really turned that model on its head. There were no readings. So what we actually had to do is, you know, based on, you know, a couple of reference books, go out and start digging in local archives, you know, start making connections, you know, that we weren't going to find online in Wikipedia or, you know, in a textbook or, you know, or something like that. And doing the real work, the work that historians do of learning about how history is made and going out in our community and making those connections.
And Elizabeth Bartles, how does Kansas City history, based on this project that you also participated in, how does Kansas City history lend itself to a greater discussion about Black history as American history?
I think that it's an incredibly important part, just because you can get your hands down into it. Being in our community, it's so important to understand where you come from and how this has influenced the way that you live today. So adding to that narrative really helps it connect with, you know, with the children that are here that are learning about everything.
Les and Elizabeth, what did you discover about American history through the project? Not just Black history or white history, but what did you discover about how these histories converge?
I'd start, you know, you look at so many of the institutions that we still have today, you know, to speak to Kansas City in particular first, you know, we think about things that are hallmarks of, you know, Kansas City history. You know, we have this rich baseball history, you know, going back to the Negro Leagues and, you know, institutions like the YMCA and jazz, which, you know, people in the city have really come to call their own. But you can't understand, you know, the history of jazz in Kansas City without understanding, you know, the broader social and political and economic institutions that existed, you know, within the African-American community in this city, you know, in the early 20th century.
Dr. McDaniel, was there anything new that popped up for you as the sort of orchestrator of this project with your students?
Well, you know, if anything, the enthusiasm the students had. I mean, to be quite frank and honest, the students that finished the course, we had 14 to begin with and 4 dropped and we ended up with 10. But the 10 that stayed, they were competitive as it relates to finding information. And I was, you know, after that experience and seeing the final product, I was enthusiastic about introducing this to a broader, to the university in a way that we had more of these courses dealing with local history. So this is just one model. What I'm enthused about at this point is that we can actually have our exhibit somewhere near 18th and Vine so that those patrons who would come down there to visit the museums would actually get some of the connective tissue from our exhibit.
Elizabeth, explain what this project was. In some classes, you do research papers, but each student was in charge of an actual panel that would be displayed. Tell us about that.
Right. It was really great because, you know, talking about application, we really got to have a choice in how we learned. So each student chose a topic that was important to them, and they explored that topic a little more in depth and visited the local archives. So it wasn't just about learning, you know, about this broad thing. We really got to focus our studies on what we found the most interesting. So doing that, you saw such a range with the students on what they found important, and it was able to fill in a lot of the pieces that you miss a lot of times on these broader survey courses.
What was your panel, Elizabeth?
I chose to do beauty culture, which is a little fun. So I looked into you know, all these great opportunities that this community had, economic, educational, social opportunities, particularly women found in this beauty culture. So where a lot of women were coming from rural areas into the city, they were able to explore opportunities like the College of Beauty and Culture on Vine Street, the LaBelle College and Hair Emporium on 18th Street. And it really was a form of empowerment for these women who didn't have choices before this time. So it was a great way to learn more about specific people and the opportunities that women were able to overcome.
And Les, what was your panel?
I ended up writing the introduction to the exhibit. Initially, I hadn't set out to write an introduction, but it became, you know, clear, you know, the more classes we had, that kind of the areas of research that I was interested in kind of overlapped with what you know the general course was about. So you know why were folks moving to Kansas City and what could they expect when they got here and what was the effect of you know segregation in Kansas City and what happened when all of these people came to live together in this community and what kind of, you know, culture did they create among themselves and how did it really change the course of history in this city?
And this local emphasis, Dr. McDaniels, is what you think can lend to a larger conversation and make Black history or African-American history more accessible?
I think so. This is actually the third exhibit that I've put together with students at UMKC. The first one was They Came to Fight, which was dealing specifically with the contributions of African Americans in the First World War. The second one was entitled A Legacy of Learning, which emphasized students of color at UMKC. And the intent of that was so that when students would come to the university and saw that they were in line with this other groups of people who have come through the university, they would see themselves as part of this long legacy of learning. And this most recent one with students has to do with these iconic institutions in our community that we don't seem to understand has a greater significance.
One of the interesting tidbits that came out on the barbecue panel is a tidbit about Nat Turner.
Yes.
Who, as legend now has it, that we find out in this presentation, he planned a slave rebellion at a barbecue.
At a barbecue. And after that, they were banned.
I can probably see why. So, but isn't this these little tidbits that we don't learn about
right.
in our larger framework Isn't this something that we need to
Yes.
do?
This is where the, you know, the investigative mind, the sense of discovery that we want to impart in our research students, this is where we benefit from it. All of us benefit from it. And so Jimmy's panel, you know, you're talking about barbecue. And so, you know, I think automatically when we talked about barbecue, people went to Gates of Bryant's. And he dug a little deeper. He wanted to know not just the origins of the best cuts of meat and why were ribs or short ribs the most important. He wanted to understand the social aspects of barbecues, people coming together, and what were some of the unintended consequences of these types of occurrences. And he dug deep.
Past the coleslaw, we're getting out of here.
That's right.
What do you have coming up next, Dr. McDaniel?
The next project I'm working on towards completion, I'm finishing the biography on Isaac Murphy, 19th century jockey, who was born at the beginning of the Civil War and died in 1896.
And there's a significance to Red, Black, and Green that goes back to that project.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a jockey, an African-American
jockey. He's an African-American jockey, and most people, I say most generalized, a number of people don't realize that jockeys, black jockeys, made up the field at a time in American history. Murphy had his own colors in 1888, raced his own horses, and his colors were red, black, and green, and white. And so this is, in some ways, one of the first kind of black nationalist kind of looks that you would find. And I'm doing some work on that, too.
And that's the sort of example of black history that's still being made every day. And
exactly.
What we're learning about.
We're still discovering these stories. And again, when you humanize these iconic figures, when you put flesh on their bones, we have a chance to appreciate their contributions and see how their examples can actually assist us in our own struggles.
It's an ongoing struggle indeed. Pella McDaniel, who appears in the film More Than a Month, is a history professor at UMKC. We're also joined by Les Stitt, history student at UMKC, and Elizabeth Bartles, history student. They did a project on Kansas City called Barbecue, Baseball, and Jazz, African-American History and Life in Kansas City, Missouri, 1914 to 1938. They are currently looking for a home for that project. Thank you for joining us today on Central Standard.
Thank you.
And tune in tomorrow for the verbal gymnastics of African-American poets and writers, including renowned spoken word artist Jessica Kerr Moore. You won't want to miss that show. Central Standard is produced by Andrea Salenzi with help from Charlie Upchurch. Up to Date is next with special guest, the deadliest American sniper ever. I'm Jabalani LaFall, and this is Central Standard. Enjoy your day.